Tony, today I want to talk about pain, like both mental pain and physical pain, the pain of human existence, what makes us human, maybe.
Maybe so, and I guess not the pain that you cause or the pain you suffer, but basically the experience of pain, which is something that we have in common with animals and plants. I mean, everybody feels pain.
Do plants feel pain?
Yes, they do.
Oh, I feel bad eating my salad now. Well, look, for this episode, never mind the existential pain, I spoke with two researchers whose respective research has found that understanding the microbiome could really actually help us understand pain.
Aha, good. So this touches on one of your favorite topics, the microbiome, and the various different areas of research to apply that to, both from an epidemiology point of view and from a treatment point of view.
Exactly. And it's just incredibly interesting, fascinating that we're living in a time where our understanding of human health and what it means to be a human being is putting the human in the center of a much more complex combined set of organisms and animals in our microbiome. And then the link of that to obviously the work that we do, which is really very interesting at the moment. And of course, the idea that dysbiosis or upsets in our microbiota are responsible or even signals for ill health is very, very interesting at the moment.
Oh, what a tangled web. I guess we better get started on this episode of Discovery Matters.
Let's begin with the body, shall we?
My name is Amir Minerbi. I'm the deputy director of the Institute for Pain Medicine at Rambam Health Campus, Haifa, Israel. And I'm also a researcher at the Faculty of Medicine at the Technion Israel Institute of Technology.
Amir's work is about the link between a condition called fibromyalgia and the microbiome. Fibromyalgia is a long-term condition that causes pain all over the body, and it predominantly affects women.
My mother included.
The main symptoms are pain. It's generalized pain, muscle soreness, sometimes skin tingling, fatigue, profound fatigue, unrefreshed sleep disturbances, what they call fibro fog, so the difficulty to concentrate and some cognitive problems, and many other symptoms. The bottom line of all of that is that the quality of life of the affected people is really affected badly. I always imagine it's like I'm having a bad flu with all my muscles sore and I'm tired and I don't have the energy to do anything, only that it's going on for years and years and not just for a few days.
It's been recently sort of brought to the fore, actually. And for many years, people didn't know what it was.
So this goes back to 2014 when I just began my residency in pain medicine. And all these studies came out about the different fields of medicine affected by the gut microbiome, initially just with gastrointestinal diseases, but then also cardiovascular and endocrine and rheumatic and et cetera. And I thought to myself then, I remember, wouldn't it be cool if chronic pain was somehow associated to the microbiome? And this just, it marinated there. And when I finished my residency, I wanted to do a research fellowship. And I contacted Dr. Yoram Shiro, who at the time was the head of the Alan Edwards Pain Management Unit in Montreal, McGill. And I told him,
I'm even embarrassed to tell it to you.
But I did tell it to him, and then he said,
"You know, this is exactly what we should do. This is what I want to do."
And I went there for 2 years, and the rest is history. We never anticipated how far this would go, really. Just a hunch. I don't know, a gut feeling, maybe.
A gut feeling. Well, there we are with one of our favorite tricks is to use a pun. The gut microbiome, these bacteria are actually causing the symptoms, and maybe they have a role in the development of the syndrome. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes, exactly. And it's the interplay between the microbiome and the immune system and how it supports potentially and works with the immune system, or how disorders of the microbiome can upset the immune system. This is what sparked Amir's interest. And Amir has been looking at the clinical implications of this. The study involved 77 women with fibromyalgia and 79 without.
And we just sampled the composition of their gut microbiome. We used DNA sequencing to identify the bacterial species that live in the guts. And initially, we were very disappointed. The overall composition of the gut microbiome was not different. We just found very similar microbiomes in fibromyalgia and in healthy controls. But then when we looked at high resolutions, we found that despite the fact that most of these bacterial species are really more or less the same, there is a small group of something like 20 bacteria that are different in fibromyalgia. Some of them were increased in abundance, some of them were decreased in abundance, but this was the first hint that we might be in the right direction.
But when Amir saw this association between the condition and the microbiome, how did he disentangle whether that is cause or correlation?
You're absolutely right to ask the question. It's not easy to disentangle correlation and causation. And indeed, we know that correlation doesn't mean causation. There's two steps, really. First is to look at how you plan the experiment in a way that there will be as little or as few confounders as possible. In this case, Amir focused on women of a certain age with no other conditions. And then secondly, he evaluated their dietary intake, their physical activity, and their sleep. And he thought by accounting for all of these factors, he'd have a view on what the influence of the gut microbiome could be on fibromyalgia.
So how did he go about figuring out whether it was one particular bacterium that was responsible for the condition?
Yeah, I know, right? That's like the big question. Is it a mixture of things going on in our bodies with viruses and bacteria and fungi all playing a role, or is it one bacterium? Well, this is where his research moved into causality, establishing causality.
What we're doing is, and this is very preliminary, it hasn't been published yet, but we are transplanting gut bacteria from women with fibromyalgia to germ-free mice. And what we see is that these mice develop pain in as little as 2 weeks. Wow. So the pain thresholds are decreased.
Fascinating. So here it is. The microbiome could actually have a role in the development of pain.
Yes. And now what he's trying to figure out is which mechanisms may allow or cause bacteria to do that.
We took it one step further. We looked at the type of bacteria that are altered in fibromyalgia. And we tried to see if we can know what kind of metabolic activities these bacteria are responsible for. And what we found is that out of these 20 bacteria, we have five that are responsible or that are involved in the metabolism of bile acids. This was kind of unexpected because we know that bile acids are secreted by the liver to the intestinal tract. They help digestion, but these are also metabolized by the gut bacteria, and they are then reabsorbed to the bloodstream. And what was new to me is that in our body, we have lots of receptors for these secondary bile acids, so for these bile acids that have been metabolized by bacteria. And they are found in the liver and in white blood cells and even in the spinal cord, where apparently they could somehow modulate the way that we feel pain.
Interestingly, one of these bacteria was almost completely absent in patients with fibromyalgia. Amir and his colleagues found that there was a striking correlation between the levels of bile acid in the blood and the level of pain that was reported by patients. The more bile acid you have, which is called alpha-muricolic acid, the less pain a patient will have.
Oh, that's so fascinating. So the presence or the absence. So that hints at not only a different composition of gut microbiome, but also a different function of it in those who suffer from fibromyalgia.
Exactly. And almost every time we've dug into the microbiome, you start to peel an onion, and with every layer you cry more, because it just gets more and more complicated, right? There's
so
much more to dig out. And we are just beginning to scratch the surface.
It takes over 4 years for a patient to have a diagnosis. I'm hoping that using machine learning, using the composition of the gut microbiome, the composition of gut microbiome-derived metabolites, such as bile acids, we will be able to make a diagnosis. So this is where we are headed. This is one thing. The second thing is obviously to try and manipulate the gut microbiome in a way that will make it more, quote, healthy. And possibly, if indeed the microbiome has a role in chronic pain, as we suspect and as we have hints, then manipulating it, maybe pushing it to be more healthy composition, might improve symptoms. And this could be an important development.
For years, you can imagine how this also impacts the mental health of those with fibromyalgia.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't imagine what it's like for your mother, right? Suffering from a disease which until recently wasn't really, recognized. And this really sort of leads us to pain in the brain. Let's talk to Professor Ilana Gorges.
I am the head of the Elton Laboratory for Molecular Neuroendocrinology, the Department of Human Molecular Genetics and Biochemistry at the Sackler Faculty of Medicine in Tel Aviv University. I'm also affiliated with the Segal School of Neuroscience at Tel Aviv University. And I'm also affiliated with the Adam Super Center for Rent Studies in Tel Aviv University, and I used to head the Adam Super Center for many years, not anymore. And I'm also the chief scientific officer of ATED Therapeutics, which is, in Hebrew we call it ATED, which means good future, which is developing Davonetide, the fragment of ADNP, initially for the treatment of ADNP syndrome children, and then the sky is the limit.
Ilana's been looking at the link between specific microbiota signatures as biomarkers for PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. Originally, she was looking at activity-dependent neuroprotective protein, something called ADNP, and whether there could be a telltale sign for ADNP in blood, which might help work with PTSD sufferers. So she wasn't looking at the microbiome at all.
And we actually also looked at soldiers, and we saw that there is a change in the blood in ADNP if they are exposed to stress. And that's what kind of made us embark on a large study on PTSD.
But the link between the microbiome and PTSD was a completely unexpected discovery.
Oh, we do like serendipity on this podcast.
Lebanon invasion was the first time the Israelis went to war without their very existence being threatened.
Zehava Salamon, that's a scientist, a professor at Tel Aviv University, who works on PTSD, collected a cohort of soldiers from the first Lebanon war. So she's following these soldiers. I thought that maybe she will have blood samples from all, all the time, and that will be fantastic. And then we will see what differs these soldiers genetically. That was the original thing. How are they different? Why some of them are still suffering from PTSD and others are well?
But the team could not get blood samples, as many of the veterans were of very advanced age by this stage. So a PhD student and one of the first named authors on the paper in the show notes.
See the show notes.
Yeah, see the show notes. Ella Leverett Levitt collected saliva samples from the veterans, and she hoped to see the RNA from the veterans in the saliva use those samples to see what genes were being expressed and whether that could be linked to stress and PTSD.
We saw that we don't really have human RNA. We have mostly bacterial RNA. We want to have human genes, but what we are getting is bacterial genes. So I made a lemonade out of the lemon. So it took some convincing. Everybody got convinced eventually. So then we thought, why look at RNA where we see it? Let's look at DNA. And we had lots and lots of DNA, which is intact and nice. So we did complete sequencing, and we looked at the bacteria, and it took a while to do this the analysis because it's human material.
So the point of the study was to find biomarkers, which Ilana and her team did find, but it was in microbiota rather than RNA.
That's exactly right. So Ilana was pointing out that biomarkers for sufferers and potential sufferers of PTSD could be very, very important. They go through psychological testing as potential patients, but many remain undiagnosed. And if we could understand that some people might be particularly prone to developing PTSD, you could make different choices about who you deployed in particularly stressful situations. And she was working in collaboration with the Israeli Defense Force.
Implications.
So, yeah, exactly. You could think about where and how and when you might deploy uniformed personnel.
Always a tough choice, and why not have better information when making those decisions? So what does that mean she's going to do next?
I mean, one of my major aspirations is actually to bring the volunteer to the clinic. In terms of PTSD, I am planning. I'm in a planning mode.
So on a side note, the team also combined these findings with air pollution data and the zip codes or postcodes that the veterans lived in.
We know that air pollution is not good for you. And those that live in air polluted regions, they are more with the PTSD. The other thing that we've asked them is in terms of years of education. And we saw that the more years of education, then the PTSD signature is not there. So they have less PTSD. What we learned, which is very simple and simply implemented, is that education education is not it's not a medicine.
So if I'm to summarize that, to diagnose PTSD, we can look at biomarkers in the microbiome. And then to minimize the impact of post-traumatic stress disorder, we need better air and more education.
That's exactly right. Cleaner living, more education in, what's not to love. Every day should be a school day. And
Amen.
Then we have a definitive way of diagnosing PTSD through microbiota signatures, an accident of Ilana's research, rather than relying purely on a psychological test or a battery of psychological tests.
The psychological criteria are sometimes very subjective. So you can feel excellent in the morning and then not so when the test is carried out, and then terrible in the evening. So that's where maybe something that is totally objective could help.
So isn't it just cool? The more we learn about the microbiome, the more it tells us about who we are and what we are and the complex interaction between all the organisms, kilos of them, that live on us and in us and around us.
And now you have justification for another one of your obsessions.
I know, exactly. And it started a long time ago with almost the first episode
That's right. When we talked about how you were stopping using soap
exactly.
in the shower.
And fortunately, I continue to not stop using soap after very short experiment, but when the N equals one,
right. Let's just sum up then the episode about pain. Understanding the microbiome allows us to better understand what's causing pain, whether that is mental or physical.
Exactly. Whether it's pain in the mind or pain in the body, it all needs treatment, it all needs assessment, and it all needs to be taken seriously.
And it all needs education and better, cleaner air. We hope this episode was pain-free to listen to. So this podcast, but not the puns, are produced with the help of Bethany Armit Brewster. Editing, mixing, and music is by Tom Henley and Banda Productions. My name, as always, is Dodi Axelson.
And I'm still Connor McKechnie. Make sure you rate us on Spotify or whichever platform you use to listen to your podcast. You'll hear more from us when we come back with another episode of Discovery Matters.